Good evening. Guten Abend. It gives me great pleasure to introduce to you the distinguished author and poet, Chava Rosenfarb. Chava has written 6 novels, 3 books of poetry, and 1 play produced by the Habima Theater of Israel. Her masterpiece, The Tree of Life, has been translated from the Yiddish into English and Hebrew. Botsiani, The Story of a Shtetl, her novel, latest novel, is due for publication this year in English. Chava is a regular contributor to the Golden Acate. She has won 9 literary awards, including the prestigious Munger Prize from the State of Israel for her life's work. Chava is a survivor of the Lodz Ghetto and of Bergen-Belsen. By the way, her book, The Tree of Life, will be available after her reading to be autographed by the author. This evening's event is sponsored by the Friends of Yiddish of Toronto and the Workman's Circle of Toronto. Chava will read to you from her work in Yiddish and in English. Ladies and gentlemen, with great pleasure, I introduce Chava Rosenfarb.
The lights are off. I'm trying with my eyes. But never mind. Oh, that's right. One? Okay, thank you. Okay. Guten Abend, liebe Freund. Ich habe groß vergnügen, Sie kommen, haben einen Kontakt mit dem Toronto Eulen, was nimmt mich zu mit euch mit groß Warmkeit. Ich will heute Abend leinen ein Lied in Jiddisch und eine Erzählung auf Englisch. Good evening, dear friends Torontonians. I greet you very heartily. I enjoyed coming here. I feel very heimish with you. Tonight, I am going to read a poem in Yiddish and a short story in English. This poem, which I'm going to read, was written a short period after the liberation from the concentration camp, when I was already a mother and I lived in Montreal. A Kleid für mein Kind. Ich wollte dir aufgenäht a Kleid, mein Kind, von läuterer Tüllen erfreit, und wollte ein Kopf baziert mit a Hut von zerschmeichelten, sonnigen Seid. Ich wollte dir angetan a paar Pantoffel von durchsichtigen, schwebendicken Glas und wollte ich herausgelassen von mein Tier mit Buketten von Zusag, von Grün und von Ros. Ist aber draußen also kalt, mein Kind, und es läuert auf dir draußen ein heftiger Wind. Er wird zerflicken das tüllene Kleidl vom Freit, beklappet wird werden dein Hittel von sonniger Seid. Zersplittern werden die Schichler von dinnigen Glas, im Blotte wird liegen der Zusag von Grün und von Ros. Schon hör ich von Weiten dein hilflos, dein kindisch Gewein. Mamele, lass mich nicht über allein. wollt ich dir auf den Eiter Kleid, mein Kind, von eigenem dunklen Zar, und dir übergenietet wird mein Hut von der Erfahrung, zu beschirmen dich von der Gefahr. Wollt ich dir angetan meine eigene Schier, gekovete mit Nägel von stechiger Pein, und wollt ich herausgelost von mein Tier mit der Taschlump von Hochme, von wissendicken Schein. Ist aber draußen also kalt, mein Kind, und es leuert auf dir draußen ein heftiger Wind. Er wird zerflicken das faltige Kleid von mein Zar, und bläusen dein Busen verpachet, dein Kopf vergefahr, und sinken werden die nägliche Schier in ein sumpiger Netz. Der Taschlump von Hochme wird werden das Oik von Aletz. Schon hör ich vom Weiten dein hilflos, dein kindisch Gewein. Mamele, los mich nicht über allein. A saschle Masel, die Geneitorin, dein Mame, kennt kein Kleid nicht nähen, feier Kind, stecht und stecht und zerblutigt Lois ihr eigenen Schome, und ihr Kopf vernarischt und ihr Oik verblind. O, als was kennt ihr aufstechen, mein lichtig, golden Kind, is a leibend Hemd von Liebschaft, gar nicht mehr. Als was könnt ihr mitgeben, is broch es in a heißer Schall von meins Atrer. Und losen in draußen, Kind, muss ich dich losen allein. Äfscher in Hemdlech von Liebe ist leichter zu lernen, sich gehen. Sieht sich und stech, und ich stech zwischen stubige Wend, und es flattert in mir das Herz, und es zittern bei mir die Hand. The story which I'm going to read to you is called Red Fagele, Reut Fagele. It belongs to a collection of short stories, which is entitled Survivors. It has not stopped snowing for 3 days. The snow is falling with such lightness that it seems motionless, as if it were suspended in mid-air like gossamer. But when one looks more closely, the snow petals can be seen floating playfully through the air or whirling weightlessly within shifting spirals before reaching the ground where they dissolve. Manya is standing by the window, peering out at the snow. A little girl is playing in the street among the heaps of snow. The child is about 5 years old. She wears a red coat and a red hat, just like Little Red Riding Hood, the little girl whom the wolf wanted to devour in the story by the brothers Grimm. Manya's child was in fact devoured by the wolf who was in a sense a grandchild of the wolf in the Grimm brothers' story. Manya's child was destroyed by the Germans when she was 5 years old. Her name had been Feigele, little bird. She too had a red coat. When she wore the red coat, her parents called her Red Feigele, little red bird. Her parents delighted in the sight of Feigele wearing the red coat. The red color suited her. It harmonized with her dark brown hair, which her mother would roll in tissue paper to form bottle ringlets. The ringlets peeked out charmingly from underneath Feigele's red hat. It did not occur to Feigele's parents to associate the red color with the color of blood, Feigele's blood. They say here in the paper that Pakistan has most likely also acquired the atomic bomb. Manya hears Feivel say to her, Feivel is her husband. Since it is Saturday, he's not working. For hours, he has been sitting in the armchair beside the fireplace, reading the double edition of the Saturday paper. Manya and Feivel met after the war in the displaced persons camp of Feldafing in Bavaria. Both had been members of the Bundist youth organization in Poland, he in Krakow, she in Lodz. They had discovered each other during those confusing post-liberation days, days of hope and despair. Neither of them had any family members left alive, so the need for closeness and intimacy with another human being was great. The air of the DP camp in Feldafing near the enchanting Sternberger See, a former vacation spot for the Nazi brass, was conducive to the flowering of awkward romances between former concentration camp inmates or those people who had arrived from exile in Soviet Russia. The surroundings made their conversations and expressions of affection acquire an air of unreality. From his previous life in pre-war Poland, Feivel retains a great interest in politics. He still worries about the world, and so does Manya. They devote a lot of time to reading newspapers, to listening to the news on the radio, and to discussing the world situation. This habit is a holdover from their socialist upbringing when they were both members of the Bund. There are those who suffer from professional deformation. Manya and Feivel suffer from a political deformation, which shows itself in their passion for politics and their adherence to a political party whose membership perished in the crematoria. They are both upset about the direction which the post-war world has taken, about the fact that the sacrifice of millions has been in vain. But in Manya's case, there lingers under the surface of her generalized sorrow concerning the fate of the world an additional, more intimate pain which translates into a longing to have another child. The world weighs heavily on my heart all day long, Manya hears Feivel saying half in jest. Usually on such a Sabbath day, Feivel is very active around the house. He arranges whatever needs to be arranged, working with his hammer, fixing things that need fixing. Energetic and active by nature, he is what has come to be called a workaholic. When he can find nothing useful to do around the house, he spends his time constructing toys for children. In fact, a large part of the garage is taken up by cartons full of the miscellaneous parts of broken appliances. He refuses to throw anything out. From these scraps, he skillfully, almost magically, creates toys. He carves, melts, hammers, files, saws, then paints and adorns every finished creation until it assumes an identity of its own, until it becomes a something out of nothing, ready to start a new existence in the service of some child's imagination. Feivel is amazingly inventive. He is a magician who is himself enchanted, transported into another world. Whenever there is a celebration at the home of one of his and Manya's acquaintances, Feivel always has a toy ready to take along for the children. He is embarrassed by the fact that he finds it difficult to part even with the most insignificant toy, but he cannot help it. Today, despite the laziness which has crept into his bones, Feivel has decided to light the fire in the fireplace. It will chase away the gloom, he says. When the fire flares up, he contentedly wraps his hands together and says to Manya, "Look, Manya dearest, how nicely the tongues of flame dance around inside." Manya does not turn her head to look at the tongues of flame cavorting inside the fireplace. She does not want to lose even one moment of watching the child in the red coat who is playing outside. She sees no beauty in the sight of the fire blazing in the fireplace. On the contrary, it horrifies her. It reminds her of the crematorium fire that swallowed her Fegele. She does not say so to Feivel. She never objects to his lighting a fire in the fireplace. He likes to do this, so let him enjoy it. After all, he had never been in a concentration camp, and he was not Fegele's father, so he cannot be troubled by the associations which disturb her. Fegele's father perished in the crematorium at the age of 24. Manya and Fegele's father had loved each other with a young love, a joyful, innocent, and naive love. When the Germans invaded Poland, Manya and her handsome young husband had tried to save themselves. They wanted to begin a new life and find a safe home for Fegele. So they ran towards the border, intending to steal a cross into the Soviet Union and there search out a place to live. But they ran out of luck. The Russians pushed them back across the border, and the Germans packed them off to the ghetto. From the ghetto, they were herded into the boxcar of a freight train, and with their families were transported to Auschwitz, where they all perished, except for Manya. The fire did not swallow her. She was destined to live, and after the war, fortune rewarded her when she met Feivel, her second husband. Pavel had spent the war years in the Soviet Gulag. The cold of Montreal was child's play in comparison with the cold of Siberia near the Polar Circle. Pavel had suffered tortures from the frost, which froze his left toe so that it had to be amputated. Even today, he is persecuted by visions of white, frosty deserts, as well as by visions of lice. Even nowadays, so many years after his incarceration, he has the ugly habit of scratching himself when he thinks that Manya is not looking. She knows that whenever he is alone, he scratches himself. Every day he stands under the hot shower for an hour or longer. Every day he washes his hair with a pungent liquid which gives off an ugly smell. Then he wraps his skin with a rough towel as if he were his own torturer. The cupboard in the washroom is piled up with bars of soap. He is constantly replenishing the stock as though in fear that the supermarket might run out. He likes to poke fun at himself. One day, he even said jokingly to Manya that he felt dirty inside as well as outside, that he would gladly swallow a bar of soap in order to cleanse himself inwardly as well. She was aware that this was one of those meaningful jokes which signifies a feeling of guilt, most likely for having abandoned his first wife and their two small children. When the Germans entered Krakow, Pavel was forced to escape. Since he had been a leader of the Bundist youth organization and served as a Bundist city councillor, the Germans had his name on their list, so he ran away. His wife and children were supposed to follow, but he never saw them again. When he returned to Poland at the end of the war, he found out that they had perished in the death camps. Manya has another suspicion about Pavel's mental state. She believes that he also feels guilty for having betrayed Bundist comrades in Soviet Russia. Being a Bundist in the USSR meant a death sentence. During one of his interrogations, an officer of the NKVD placed the nozzle of a revolver against Pavel's temple. Pavel told Manya about these experiences when they met for the first time in the DP camp in Feldafing. She a Bundist from Lodz, he a Bundist from Krakow. Even today, Manya thinks she sees the fear of death peering out of Pavel's eyes. This fear of death strengthens the bond of love between them. It keeps them bound to one another in many complicated ways. It plays a role even in their lovemaking, in which their former mates somehow seem to be participating. Manya and Pavel's life together is a dual conspiracy, a futile means of effecting an escape from the constant threat of unbearable, unspeakable memories. This is why Manya can bear without even a twinge of disgust, the sight of Fievel scratching himself, nor is she repulsed by the offensive odor emanating from his scalp. On the contrary, she is attracted to him. They desire each other with desperate passion. They have nobody else in the world but each other, and this sad, pitiful happiness of theirs. It is a sad, pitiful happiness because a curse hangs over it. Ever since Manya and Fievel first met, they have been dreaming of establishing a family and having a house full of children. But in all these years, Manya has been unable to conceive. She is barren and is consumed by the burning desire to hold a child in her arms, to caress it, fondle it, press it to her bosom, and imbibe with her kisses the balm of consolation over the loss of Fegele. In the past 10 years, she has tried many times to adopt a child through the Baron de Hirsch Foundation, but has constantly been refused. Her war experiences are still too powerful. They impinge too strongly on her mental condition, say the psychiatrist to whom the foundation has sent her. The doctors cannot understand why Manya is unable to conceive. She, however, does understand. It is because of Fegele's father. He will not allow her to become pregnant. He considers her a traitor. The other perished members of his and her families are of the same opinion. They surround her bed whenever she and Fievel make love. She feels them following her every step and sitting in judgment on everything that she and Fievel do. They are all on the side of Fegele's father. First love is a sacred love, they tell her, as though she did not know it. She knows it, and knows as well that Fegele's father is jealous. He begrudges her the sad happiness she has with Fievel. But mainly, Fegele's father does not allow her to conceive on account of Fegele. Fegele's memory requires all your devotion, she hears him say to her. He is right, of course, but how can it ever occur to him that her memory of Fegele would ever fade, even if she brought a house full of children into the world? Would not Fegele still have Manya's motherly love? How could it ever be otherwise? How is it possible that Manya should not carry Fegele's name sealed on her lips forever, even though she never utters the name aloud? Even after her death, Manya's memory of Fegele would hover in the air above the earth. Such a powerful, indestructible longing can never be erased. The voice of Fegele's father, which echoes in Manya's head, talks nonsense. It has become the voice of an irascible person, a severe, vengeful voice. In order to escape that voice and to calm her grief, Manya frequently goes for walks past the shops with children's clothing. She stops in front of them and peers in through the window, looking at the bibs or the tiny socks and shoes, or she admires the displays of little girls' dresses adorned with flounces and ribbons. The coats and hats, especially when they are red, attract her. She has never yet been able to walk past such a store without entering. She looks around, approaches one rack after another, touching one tiny outfit and another. She seldom leaves the store empty-handed. At home, she plays with the tiny outfits. She sees them inhabited by soft, live bodies. She vividly imagines the delicate limbs, the round faces, and hears the echoes of gurgling laughter. An entire drawer of her bedroom cupboard is filled to overflowing with these small clothes. Whenever one of her acquaintances gives birth to a girl, Manya has a ready gift to present to her. And every time, as she wraps the gift in pink paper, she feels an ache in her heart. To part with a never-worn little dress, one which has absorbed the warmth of a mother's never-expressed caresses, is not an easy thing. Feivel, who wraps up a gift of his own, understands her very well. The snow has not stopped falling. Peering through its white curtain, Manya can see the little girl's red coat vibrating slightly, as if it were both real and unreal, as if it possessed hypnotic power. She feels herself attracted to the child. She longs for it so badly that her entire body quivers with the desire to touch the small figure, to hold it in her arms, embrace it, and press it to her bosom. "Is something wrong, Manya, my dear?" she hears Feivel ask. "Heaven forbid," she responds. "Are you angry at me for something?" "Why should I be angry, my dearest?" "Because when I said that there are rumors that the Pakistanis have an atom bomb, you didn't answer me." "What's there to answer, Feivel dear? I am looking at a beautiful little girl playing outside in the snow. Such a delight to look at her." Feivel sighs. "The truth of the matter is that it is I am the one who is not in my skin today," he says. "I don't know what's happening to me. A laziness has crept into my bones, and I feel as if a rock were sitting on my chest." Although he never talks about it, Manya suspects Feivel of holding her responsible for the emptiness of their home. Of course, he knows that it is not her fault, but he cannot help himself. It is because of her that he has not become a father again. She once proposed to him that they go their separate ways so that he might find himself another woman and have children with her. But Feivel scolded her and warned her never to bring up the subject again. In her opinion, this was the best proof that he is inwardly toying with just such an idea, but dares not to let it rise to the surface of his consciousness. His preoccupation with the toys which he constructs is another indication of the same thing, thinks Manya. The glowing logs crackle in the fireplace as if they were about to explode with Manya's tension. She cannot bear the silent reproach hovering in the stillness of the room. The air is so heavy that it is impossible to breathe. Manya sees herself running out of the room. Where is she running? She's running towards the child in the red coat who is playing outdoors in the fog of snowy whiteness. She is trying to break through the curtain of dizzying icy light to reach the little girl and say to her, "Come for a walk, Fegele." She sees herself walking with Fegele, who skips along playfully by her side. Manya hands her a toy clown, which Feivel has made. When Fegele pulls at the string, the toy clown bends his legs and blinks his eyes roguishly at her. Manya and Fegele enter the park where there is a joyous commotion. The park is full of mothers and children who slide on their sleds, glide by on their skates, or tumble down mountains of snow. Fegele runs around while Manya tries to keep up. Manya cannot shake off the tension she feels. She's afraid that Fegele might get lost, afraid that the flames of the crematorium or the fallout of the atomic bomb will destroy her. Manya grabs hold of Fegele's soft, plump hand. What a sweet feeling to hold a child's hand in the palm of one's own. Manya feels the warmth of the small, tender palm with its soft, boned fingers. The warmth spreads all over her body. How could anybody destroy a creature who has such soft, plump hands, such small, delicate hands? Manya cannot let go of the hand. She will steal the child. Yes, she will kidnap her and hide with her from the world so that Fegele could resuscitate Manya's soul. Manya has such a powerful impulse to do it, an impulse which she cannot control, but which she must control, because she could never hurt the little girl's mother by depriving her of her child. Oh, she knows very well the bitter taste of that pain. To this day, she feels the violent wrench at her heart and the unbearable weight of her suddenly empty arms. To rob a mother of her child is the greatest sin imaginable, even if one has not the least intention of harming the child. On the contrary, Manya wants to raise it on the milk of love, which she has gathered in her breast to the point of bursting. But then the little girl bursts into tears as if she were frightened by Manya's thoughts. "I'm scared," she cries. "I want to go home to my mama. I want my mama." "I am your mama." "No, you are not. My mama's hand is softer than yours." "There is a strange pain in my right arm," Feivel mutters. He is sitting in the armchair beside the fireplace, bent forward as if he were being pulled to the floor. The creased newspaper rests on his lap, surmounted by his hand limply rolled in a fist. Manya is smiling to the little girl who is playing in the snow in front of the window. She waves her hand to her. The child does not see. Manya imagines how the little girl would have looked when she was smaller, when she was 3, for instance, or 2. Manya sees her own Fegele learning how to walk, taking her first steps. She thinks back to Fegele's birth and feels in her nipples the pain and the delight of nursing Fegele for the first time. "I'm having trouble moving my right arm, Fievel mumbles. Did Fievel say something? Manya sees herself riding on a bus in the direction of the Jewish General Hospital. In the past, she had gone there to visit just as a pastime. She feels at home at the Jewish General Hospital. In that magnificent building, there is a constant struggle with death, Afud. But in the obstetrics wing, life is constantly in the process of renewing itself. Manya would gladly strike up a conversation with the nurses of the maternity ward, but she dares not to accost them. Although in Poland, she had once been a nurse. In the concentration camp, she had worked in the infirmary, performing the most unproductive of all medical functions, that of putting the patients back on their feet so that they could march to the crematorium under their own steam. Manya takes the elevator up to the maternity ward. As soon as she enters the bright corridor, she sees a nurse coming towards her. This time, Manya cannot restrain herself and speaks to the nurse. This ward is the exact opposite of the infirmary where I worked in the concentration camp. There, people suffered from hopelessness, while here they give birth to hope. The nurse stares at her, unable to grasp Manya's meaning. After a moment, she breaks into a knowing laugh. Her laughter mingles with the sounds emanating from the open doors of the many rooms. It mingles with the cries of the newborn babies and the giggles of the new mothers. Manya regrets having accosted the nurse. She has got no right to be here. They might expel her before she manages to steal some joy for herself. She sneaks into the small room where the newborn babies are shown by a nurse through a window pane to relatives and friends of the parents. Envy grips Manya's heart, an envy so powerful that it demolishes all scruples. She is unable to stop herself as she spreads four fingers at the nurse on the other side of the window pane, asking to be shown the newborn in the crib number 4, which stands beside the window. And so the miracle happens. To Manya's delight, the smiling nurse appears at the window with the swaddled baby in her arms. She advances it very close to Manya's face on the other side of the pane, so that Manya can have a good look. It is a beautiful baby, such a sunny face that Manya screws up her eyes in order not to be dazzled by the light emanating from it. Fegele, Manya exclaims, and smacks her lips at the baby. I once had a little girl like this one, she says to the woman standing next to her by the window. The Germans killed her when she was 5 years old. The woman casts a piercing glance at her and steps back, as it seems to Manya, in fear. It would have been a young grandmother. I would have been a young grandmother by now, and my Fegele would have given birth perhaps in this very same ward and become a young mother. The woman standing at Manya's other side inquires, pointing with her eyes at the baby on the other side of the window, "Your grandchild?" "Yes," Manya replies, "my daughter Fegele's child." Manya finally steps out of the room into the corridor of the world. She notices that no one is at the nurse's station, which adjoins the waiting room. The nurses are busy making the rounds of the world, carrying babies to their mothers for nursing. Manya takes off her coat and hangs it up on a coat rack in the waiting room. Slightly, they clumsily busy themselves with the tiny bundles of life cradled in their arms. Manya assists them. With respect and gratitude in their eyes, they listen to her instructions. She teaches them how to hold the babies closer to their breasts and how to suckle them. As she does so, she plays with the babies' minuscule fingers, allowing them to grip her own. She kisses the soft bone fingers and allows them to explore her mouth. She walks from one room to the next until she comes to a room where a pretty young mother, one of her breasts exposed, is reclining on a white bed. In her arms, she is cuddling the baby, which Manya had seen through the glass earlier. The pretty young mother is at a loss. Saliva bubbles on her lips as though she herself were a newborn infant. "What's the matter?" Manya asks her. She doesn't want to suck. She doesn't know how to take the nipple. The young mother is near tears. "Nothing to worry about, my dear." Manya strokes the mother's shoulder and smiles maternally at her. "She will learn the trick in no time. Instinct will teach her. But now, my dear, please forgive me for interrupting you in your pleasure. I must take your daughter away for a few minutes, no longer, for a blood test. We will take no more than one tiny drop of blood. She won't lose even one little hair on her head, I assure you, because how can anybody want to hurt such a magnificent little creature?" Carefully, delicately, Manya lifts the baby out of his mother's arms and carries it into the corridor. She jerks her coat from the coat rack in the waiting room and covers the baby on her arm with it. She does not approach the elevator, but heads for the exit door to the stairwell. Hastily, she runs down the stairs with the precious bundle in her arms. So many stairs, going down, down, down. At last, she is in the street. Only now does she realize that she is still wearing the white nurse's uniform. As soon as Manya brings the baby into the house and deposits it on the bed, a brightness fills the entire room, as if the sun in full radiance has burst through the snow which is still falling on the ice-cold world on the other side of the window. Manya hears a strange sound, a pounding, a groaning noise, followed by an interrupted screech. She has probably shut the door too loudly, despite her extreme caution. Now it is quiet in the house. She has not had a chance to look around, but she is aware that Faivel is not at home. This surprises her. Where can he have gone on such a Saturday, leaving the fire untended in the fireplace? But she has no time to look into the matter right now. She has to hurry. The life of a baby is in her hands. She leaves the sleeping baby on the bed and rushes out to the supermarket to buy some milk formula. She also buys a substantial number of bottles so as never to run out of milk for the baby, no matter what. She buys a supply of diapers, pacifiers, baby powder, Vaseline. This chore, what's that? Okay. This chore accomplished, she hurries to those shops of children's clothing which she has always haunted and purchases an entire new wardrobe for the baby girl. Granted, she has a drawer full of baby clothes at home, but for this occasion, she must have something special. She also buys a red coat and a red hat. She will save them for when Fagel is 5 years old. But she does not buy a single toy. There can be no prettier toys than the ones which Fievel has made. After all, he constructed them all for their daughter. Manya keeps no secrets from Fievel. He is her only friend. As soon as she can, she shows him the baby, and as she has expected, he clicks his lips at it. Only afterwards does he reproach Manya for having committed this hideous crime of breaking a young mother's heart. But as he scolds her, she reads tenderness and gratitude in his eyes. After all, he too is dying to have a little Fagel, a little bird in the nest. He has suspected that Manya might one day concoct such a plan, even though it is a criminal act. He knows that she is capable of risking even her life so as to brighten their sad home. He loves her too much to divorce her, and she loves him too, very, very much. Granted that neither their love for each other nor the well-being of their home can justify the crime that has been committed. It is a horrible crime. Horrible in particular because of its being committed by a former concentration camp inmate. But it does not occur to Fievel to go to the police. Had he done so, Manya would have had to go to prison for a long time. And why does he deserve to be deprived of his beloved Manya? No, he would rather become a partner to her guilt. They would share the punishment and together be incarcerated in the prison of their consciences. Manya and Fievel nervously, anxiously pack their belongings. They are getting ready to leave the country. The police will very soon be on their track. Fievel is full of energy. He looks younger and healthier than ever. His muscular arms with their blue swollen veins bulge out from beneath rolled up sleeves as he carries the suitcases to the car. He sits down at the wheel and soon, forelocks flying in the wind, he is headed down the road. Manya sits beside him, holding Fagel on her lap. The highway cuts into an endlessness seeming to have no horizon. The police are in hot pursuit of the two criminals who hide in museums where Fievel takes the opportunity to study the maps of the world. They sleep in public libraries where Fievel pores over thick tomes of world history. But search as he may, he cannot find a spot on the entire globe where Fagele could enjoy a safe, peaceful future. Interpol, Scotland Yard, the CIA are after them. Nobody is willing to give refuge to the escapees. All ports are shut tight. All borders are off limits. No admission to child stealers, scream the posters affixed to all entrances at borders. Turn back, turn yourselves into the police. Voices roar at them from the loudspeakers on ships. It is not the first time in their lives that Manya and Fievel hear these injunctions. This is how they were shouted at in the past when they were innocent. The newspapers are full of pictures of the kidnapped child's mother. Her tear-stained face is shown on TV. Weeping, she appeals to the public to help her find the little girl. Manya sobs along with her, and along with her, she appeals to the public. At the Mexican border, the traffic of illegal crossings is flowing in the opposite direction, out, not in. This is good. Nobody guards the way in. So the three of them cross the border and travel until they reach the Yucatan Peninsula, former home of the ancient kingdom of the Mayas, land of pyramids which hover majestically over the entire region. Manya and the child, Manya, Fievel and the child, mingle with the crowds of tourists climbing the pyramids. Everywhere they find traces of the old civilization, along with traces of the brutality which was part of ancient religious rituals. A stone altar where humans were sacrificed to the gods decorates the entrance to one of the ruined temples. One can still see the sports arena where the sportsmen fiercely competed with each other, each team vying for the honor of being proclaimed the winner, because only the winner was granted the privilege of being sacrificed to the gods. From time immemorial, the gods have thirsted for blood. In every corner of the globe, humans have built altars of one sort or another to sacrifice victims of their own species. To search for peace is futile. There is no choice but to continue living in the shadows of these altars. A year earlier, Manya and Fievel had visited the Yucatan as tourists. They had come to celebrate their 25th wedding anniversary. They had spent unforgettable days here, for which reason they now returned and set up house in the hacienda on the other side of the main pyramid. Manya dresses like a Mexican Indian so that no one should recognize her. Fievel grows a bushy Mexican mustache. He wears a poncho and a sombrero hides his head. He looks very virile and attractive. At night, they dance in the shade of the pyramids by the light of the enormous stars. Mariachis strum on their banjos, singing melancholy tunes interspersed with hot rhythms which heat the blood in one's limbs. Fagele grows fast. She's 5 years old. She's already wearing the red coat and the red head, which look very becoming on her. She is a wonderful, beautiful child. The tourists visiting the pyramids stare at her enchanted. Manya's heart is full of pride at the same time as it freezes with fear in case one of the tourists should become suspicious. Feivel suffers from no such fears. He abandons himself to his delight in Feigele. He is the tenderest of fathers. He tells Manya that he has only just begun to realize how badly he had wanted a child. At times, he even forgets that the child is not his. Manya and Feivel are delighted with their stone Mexican happiness, but not Feigele. Feigele is unhappy. She is growing up with this strange feeling that Manya is not her mother. "Don't call me Feigele," she says to Manya. "Why not?" Manya asks as a shudder creeps down her spine. "Aren't you my child?" "No, I am not." Feigele bursts into tears as if she were frightened by Manya's fear. "I am scared," she sobs. "I want to go home to my mama. I want my mama." "I am your mama." "No, you are not. My mama's hand is warmer than yours." Every time that Manya hears these words, she gets the colics and her heart does not stop pounding. Feigele dreams of the land of snow, about which Feivel had told her many stories. So the three of them prepare to return to the land in order that Feigele can see the snow for the first time and go for a sleigh ride. It is a joyful trip. Manya is lighthearted and playful. As soon as they reach their destination, one snowy afternoon, Manya dresses Feigele in her red coat with the red cap and seats her on a sleigh which Feivel has made. Manya trudges through the snow-covered streets, pulling the sleigh in the direction of the Jewish General Hospital. There, they leave the sleigh at the door and take the elevator to the maternity ward. Manya places the little girl by the desk in the brightly lit corridor and pins a small note to her collar. "Wait here," she says to the little girl. Cheerfully, she plants a kiss on her forehead and turns around. She takes the elevator down and goes outside. There she sees the sleigh which Feivel has made. She does not want to part with it, so she takes it along. She walks back home, pulling the empty sleigh to the snow of the street. The maternity ward nurses at the Jewish General Hospital notice the child in the red coat and the red hat who stands at the desk waiting for someone. They smile at her and she smiles back. They notice the note pinned to her collar and read, "I am the child who was taken from my mother's arms 5 years ago. I vanished from this hospital and this world. I want to get back to my mama." Manya turns her head away from the window. As her eyes focus on the room, she sees Feivel sprawled in his armchair, his head resting on his shoulder, his arms dangling limply above the floor. The creased newspaper lies between his oddly turned-in feet. He looks as if he were asleep. Outside, the snow continues to powder the street. The little girl in the red coat with the red head glides through the white fog. the fire crackles in the fireplace. Thank you.